Good morning.
Welcome to Unitarian Universalist Church in Fullerton. My name is Christina Garner, and I'll be your service associate for this morning's service. I work in our community as a high school teacher, and kids are my reality all the time. So if you're not used to kids 24/7, you can get a little feel today of what my world is usually like. All the other educators in our community. Today we have a child-led worship. And it reminds us that our minister told us that worship means worship. It's the day that we're going to talk about what we find worthy and valuable and important in the life that we share together. Here in the Unitarian Universalist Church, we're dedicated to the principles of a free faith, the search for truth, and the dignity of all people. We're an inclusive community. We appreciate your diversity of belief, of age, of race, of color, of affectional or sexual orientation, of national origin. If you're a visitor, could you please fill out a guest form in the entryway so that you can receive several mailings of our newsletter? We hope that this will give you more information about our church and current events. Please review the order of service for announcements and information about our church and to find out what's going on in our community. You do not have to be a member to enjoy our church activities. Our minister is present today. He's coming in with a special message for us to help us cope with the national trauma that we've experienced in the last week. And thank you, John, for making a special effort to come on a Sunday that you were not normally assigned to do, part of true ministry. If you've been attending services with us for a while and you feel comfortable here, we invite you to take the next step in your personal journey with us by signing our membership book. By signing the book, you'll become a member of this religious community, and you'll be agreeing to support us with your time, your talent, and treasure. If there's anyone here today that would like to find out more about becoming a member, please see John Dover, our print minister. He's in the front row. Or you can see me after the service to be introduced to a representative of our membership committee. Our opening words this morning will be spoken by my daughter, Ingrid Garner. I believe the children are the future. Teach them love, but let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside. Give them a sense of pride. To make it easier, let the children's laughter just remind us of how we used to be. There are many words of wisdom that we can look to for our understanding. Sometimes they're found in the Bible or in another holy text. This morning they were found in a rapper's song. Please enjoy some more music by our children.
Welcome to our service. We are universalists. Come join.
expedition, and today I'd like to invite Ruth and Eric Agato, our family of the day, to light our child for this morning service. Alice, would you join me in reading the response from the order of service?
This flame affirms the light of truth, the warmth of community, and the fire of commitment.
Visitors, we'd like to invite you to join us in the social afterwards. There's coffee, there's conversation. We'd love to meet you and talk with you a little bit too. That's all right. Visited Salzburg and took a bus tour, We took a bus up into the mountains and we were singing a song to people of every country of the world. We were all singing. And everyone knows the song except the people that live in Salzburg. This morning we're going to conduct our food collection. Our food goes to the interface. It's called FIGHT, Fullerton Interfaith Emergency Services. We bring food each week because we know that year-round there's a need for help and support in our community. And Elizabeth Chidrill will give us some compliments. The children's job is to collect the food, so if you've got offerings, would you find a child and let them bring them in?
Please see Mr. Cole if interested. Additional apps are still needed for the township. We see this using space better.
Thank you. We're going to have our talent show. It's going to be on the Cinco de Mayo. So it's a community fiesta this time. And as the whole idea is, Gary and I had this idea, is wouldn't it be nice to belong to a community? And so we're creating that. We have musical acts, we have juggling, we have magic. We need people to read some poetry. We need some people to read some of their favorite literature, 5 minutes or so. Anything that you can bring to make this feel like more of a community is welcome. Thank you. See me or Gary or Carolyn Chung Bodman. Carolyn here?
No.
She won't mind me mispronouncing her name. Thank you.
There's 1 week left till the Cross Holder Walk next Sunday, the 29th, 1 p.m. Be the $1 t-shirt along with the registration right after the service today. There is still time. See Tim Lane back there. Or Marley Torley after the service if you have any questions. Angelo and Vinci will host a post-walk pizza party, 3:15 to 6:30 p.m., $25. $25 raised will give you one free slice of pizza. $50 raised will give you two free slices. Three smoothies will also be available.
It is hot.
Thank you, gentlemen. And at this time, we have Captain Patrick's present to do a presentation for us on the summer team. Okay, great. What we're going to be doing is taking a little bit longer than we'll create for our service, but we'd like to invite you to do it for a PowerPoint in the social hall afterwards, and so tell you more about how you can go up to the mountains and enjoy our camp. At this time, would you join me in an affirmation that unites us in our common community? And it is our order of service.
Love is the doctrine of this church. The quest of truth is its sacrament, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek knowledge and freedom, to serve human need, thus do we covenant with one another.
John, would I ask you to lead us in sharing your joys and sorrows?
I know you really want that microphone. This is the... Okay. Good morning. This is our time for sharing of our joys and sorrows, information about ourselves, our family, our church family, where we'd like the attention, the cards, the letters, the covered dishes, the prayers of the congregation directed. And emblematic of your joys and concerns and your cell phones that are still on, you're invited to come up and share as I light a candle. For the joys that we share, for the concerns that we share, for all of those wedding receptions we have to pay for, let's follow the bell into a quiet place, all right, a more or less quiet place, and be there for a few moments together.
Unitarianism and Universalism come from? Who are the Unitarian Universalists? Today we will travel in time to
1700s and 1800s and look back to events in our Unitarian Universalist history that shaped our faith in principles. So Zombling Part 1. It's 1819 and Samuel Clippett, a young pastor with a shock of brown hair, large friendly eyes, and a quiet voice, made a plea for the return to teachings and examples of Jesus and free from confused Calvinist views. William Ellery Channing delivered the historic Baltimore Sermon, which marked the beginning of the Fellowship of Unitarian Churches. Channing called ministers and congregations to declare themselves on one side or the other, and so, in May 1825, the American Unitarian Association was formed. Although Channing himself had not wanted a separate organization of Unitarian churches, he became the founder of a new American denomination. Nearly 200 years ago, when Thomas the ship sailed on oceans and the horses cliffy crossed on cobblestone streets, two young ladies named Amelia and Emily were walking to the apartment. has a theme change. We have another skit to present. This skit was offered by the upper elementary children, and now the upper elementary and the middle school children will unite to offer a theme of change.
God would want millions of humans to go to hell. Besides, John, Is anyone really completely good? Let's find out more. I've heard of a man called James Welly who teaches about a God that is good. A God that doesn't look down on people and doesn't care if you're a person.
Finally, after talking about it for years, John Eliza decided to listen to what Mr. Welly, the Universalist preacher, has to say. Finally, after talking about it for years, John and Eliza decided to listen to what Mr. Rowan, the Universalist preacher, had to say. So one Sunday, John and Eliza got up early, got dressed, ate their breakfast, and went to church. At Mr. Rowan's church, people were happy. Everyone smiled. Someone actually laughed.
God loves all his children. God doesn't have any favorites. Everyone in the universe has a chance to go to heaven and be saved from the fires of hell. Salvation is universal.
John and Eliza's friends were shocked and refused to be friends with them anymore, but John and Eliza didn't mind. Universalism gave them hope in place of stern judgment. John discovered that he no longer looked down on people. He now cared deeply about others, rich and poor. John and Eliza made new friends, and to add to their happiness, they had a baby boy. Then suddenly everything changed. Their baby died and Eliza became sick. John spent all their money and borrowed more to save her, but she died too.
Aww.
He was thrown into debtor's prison for owing money.
Teach about a loving God to save all people, not just
chosen to you. Today, when I saw a ship at sea, a voice inside me came to say, there it was, and that ship may be the creature you have been so long expecting.
But I am not a preacher.
But can you say you never preached?
I have preached, and I believe as you do in the loving God.
I knew it. You had preached for whom I have been waiting for so long. You got to preach out in my church on Sunday.
No, I never want to preach again. Tomorrow, as soon as the wind changes, I will be on my way.
I just
want to get away from everything. If I preach universalism, I know there will be trouble. Folks here in America have prophecies just as in England. Why start trouble for myself in a new country? But Thomas Barton has such faith in me. And he is so kind. Oh, I just wish I knew what to do.
By Saturday night, the wind has still not changed. And John finally reached the beach next morning. Thomas Cotton was overjoyed.
I'm going to spread the word to all the neighbors. They can expect such a sermon they have never heard before.
And so on Sunday morning, September 30th, 1770, Thomas Cotton's dream came true, and John Murray delivered the first universalist sermon in America.
I think you're up.
Thank you to the children for their performances. I think they've succeeded in being our educators for the day. When I first encountered the Unitarian Universalist Congregation, I thought it was a brand new thing that people do in California. And then I found out that it had, in the United States, 200-year-old history. And after I met my son-in-law from Transylvania, I found out he had a 500-year-old history in Europe as well.
With a message, and I'd like to
and we will see our Reverend Chandler later tonight.
Thank you. Well, I'm sorry to be here for the message part, but I am so glad to be here to see the wonderful, wonderful children and their participation, talent, enthusiasm. It is, it really is a special day to be here. But it's been, may I say, in the presence of the children, a hell of a week. And many adults are very sad, and many young people are very frightened. And also sad. And I think that it's important for us to look at our world and to engage it with a very important attitude. And that is that we are not helpless. One of the most terrible feelings that people can get is a sense of having no choices, no options, no power in dealing with our environment. That our world is completely random and we are powerless to engage it or to protect ourselves, and the world is just terribly, horribly dangerous. Well, that's 100% half true. We have some tools for engaging our world emotionally. We have some ways of feeling a sense of security and safety, not perfect security, not perfect safety, but with the use of reason and choices and being in touch with what is going on in our world and what's going on inside ourselves, we can make the world emotionally safer for all of us. What I don't want to talk about today, and we'll be happy to talk about and discuss on Tuesday, is the issue of guns and gun control. Obviously, guns kill people, and bullets kill people, and people with guns kill people, and they can be dangerous. So can cars, so can gasoline, so can lots of things in the world. It's a legitimate discussion and debate. The media's irresponsibility and its responsibilities is another important topic. The issues of mental health, of medication, of follow-up, the whole idea of outpatient committal, where somebody is released and able to go to school but has to check in and has to be on meds. That's a whole very interesting and very important societal discussion, but I want to speak to the emotions. It's been a very emotional week for me personally. I'm having an emotional kind of incarnation right now. On Thursday, I came downstairs to my wife at about 10 o'clock, just as Grey's Anatomy was ending, and said, "Honey, I think you better call 911. I have radiant chest pain." And given the fact that my father passed away at 56 and his father at 42, I had sat upstairs for a little bit trying to deny the reality, and denial is one of the greatest causes of death in men. Because we sit there and say, it's nothing, I don't need to do anything about it, and we miss the golden hour, and we miss our chance. Reasonably, I thought, it's probably indigestion. But those, even if the odds are long, the odds are important. And the question is, do you err on the side of getting help? Even if you feel foolish that you're not having a coronary, which is a very strange position to be in, I want to tell you. I really hate to bother you folks. I hope it's really something. The problem, of course, is that everything is a coronary symptom for men, and almost everything for women. Chest pain, radiant chest pain, indigestion, something that you think is indigestion, back pain, something that processes itself as gas. There are so many indications that it's easy just to dismiss it. I want to say that it is very much the same thing when we're talking about killers and violence. There are so many indications. Was the person alone, or did they feel alone and left out? I'm not going to ask the kids if you ever feel alone and left out, because I know the answer. Sometimes you do. I'm going to ask the adults, do you remember feeling alone and left out when you were in elementary school, in junior high school, like nobody would choose you for the team, nobody would ever date you, that you were just never going to ever be kissed, and you just wanted to hide out and disappear?
How'd you know?
I was watching. Actually, I read about you on the net. Your Facebook profile is not pretty, Chris. I need to tell you that. When you are looking at the criteria, when they all go back and describe, well, he had all the warning signs, everybody at some point has one or two or three of the warning signs. Engaging in violent fantasy? Well, I still do. I've got the photon torpedo button on the dashboard of my car. Somebody cuts me off. I have very violent fantasies. Play video games. I'm not coordinated enough for the violent video games. Play Dungeons and Dragons when you were a kid, off in a fantasy land. Everything is an indication, and the truth is, most people, when you play the odds, most kids grow up to be, dare I say to the adults here, normal. It's a low bar. And to the kids, I want to say that your parents are probably as weird as you think they are and as weird as you sometimes think that you are. And actually, Chris, in that choir response, proved it as I was able to read the house. Everything is a criterion, and all dots are easy to connect once it happens. But what do we do? Well, what we do is we look at a couple of things. One of them is to reach out to people whom you see and feel and sense to be alone and to be rejected. It's not an absolute way of preventing madness, but it is a start to, when you see the person who is not talking, to try to reach out to the person that other kids say is weird. It sometimes doesn't work. And when it doesn't work, our responsibilities as human beings, whether old guys like me or young people like you, is to try to find help. That is not snitching. That is not busting. That is caring about somebody's life. It has happened to me on many occasions, and very recently, where somebody told me that they wanted to kill themselves and they wanted my help in doing that, in an act of depression, not as at the end of a disease mechanism, but just out of a sense of failure and depression. I had a responsibility to get this person help. When I told the psychiatrist who was treating him about the suicide, not simple threat, but the attempt to enlist me, my friend said to me, "But I thought that was in confidence. Why are you snitching on me? Why are you ratting on me?" And there is no confidence when somebody is a danger to themselves or others. The thing that we need to do for each other is to take a chance on somebody being angry at us so that they might live. I was willing to lose his friendship rather than risk losing his life. He did have to go into a locked ward. He had to, in fact, go twice. He was at the end of his rope, almost literally, and 5 months later, he is employed, he is back home, he is living successfully with his wife. Had I not made that connection, I don't believe any of those things would have happened. Did my reaching out and trying to get him help guarantee a good result? No, it doesn't. But what we are armed with is the ability to try to make a difference without a guarantee that we can. We are not helpless when we see somebody hurting and suffering. We can try to reach out first with our arms and with invitations to be with us. And when that doesn't work, and when our instincts tell us to be afraid, to try to get that person the help that they need. We might make mistakes, but make mistakes, as I did, on the side of life, on the side of being careful, and not on the side of, oh, it's probably nothing. Nothing will come of it. It's easy to feel overwhelmed in a frightening world. There is violence. You know, cars crash, planes crash, there are wars, there are diseases. But you know something? When we use the tools of reason, we are extraordinarily safe. We are extraordinarily safe in our homes, in our cars, and in our schools. Yes, bad things happen, and we don't want to deny those things, but we also don't want our electronic connection to the world to make our worlds so frightening, so overwhelming, that we are coming out of places of fear all of the time. We wear seat belts because that is a reasonable precaution against a car crash. Most of us are safer in our churches, in our homes, and in our schools, and on our airplanes than we are coming to church, going to school, and riding to the airport. When we analyze our world and our choices, we have the tools of reason, of compassion, of adults that we can go to as adults, children whom we can question and offer ourselves as resources to both reach out and help those who are marginalized. It is sometimes very scary out there, but when we really look at the microcosm in which most of us live, we have a tremendous tool for being able to respond to that environment, and we should live mostly with a sense of security, aware of dangers, but not overwhelmed by those dangers. Because while we share this beautiful and, yes, fragile miracle, there is more beauty in most of our lives and more beauty in our environment and more positive and loving things that we can do with and for each other than there are dangers, prescient, imminent dangers to all of us. Let's not get fooled by all of the warning signs and all of the video games and all the rap, all important issues. Let's hang on to how much of a difference we make to each other in a sense of our security in this world. Let's hang on to the tools that we have to understand and evaluate and act in this big and powerful world. The analogy for me really is like sailing on a small sailboat. The forces of the wind and the tides are more than we can manage. We are not in control, but we are not out of control either. We have a small sail, we have a small keel, we have a small rudder with which we can guide ourselves more often than not safely to shore. And in good company, we count with an affirmative faith in each other, in guiding each other and voyaging with each other to the safety of the next shore. Do not be terrified. Do not be scared beyond what the reality is. The reality is tough enough. But terror, and this was an act, by the way, of domestic terror, terror only works when one is terrorized. If we understand the danger and the odds, we can live affirmatively in a world that is much more beautiful than not.
Please join the Unitarian Universalist community to practice our faith, because we're still practicing. We don't always get it right. They say practice makes perfect, so we'll continue on. Our final words remind us of the name of our denomination, the Teaching. Unitarian Universalist, that's the name we say when someone asks us, what religion are you? And they usually say, I don't know what? Unitarian Universalist, we say again, but often the name is by itself doesn't seem to explain very much. Perhaps that's because Unitarian Universalist is not really a name by itself. It's two names together, like two streams merging together to form one great river. Unitarian Universalist, that's us.
Would you join us now in a closing circle? We will sing ourselves into the other room.